Jump into your Jaegers one more time with us as we drift into another Netflix kaiju series. Will this original story add to the expanded universe built by Del Toro or detract from the film's illustrious canon? Find out along with us this week. This is Kaiju vs. History, Pacific Rim, The Black.
Welcome back to Kaiju Versus History. This is your Aussie sibling survivor, Patrick, and joining me is Copperhead Dundee with a big Bowie knife, Miles. Hey, Miles.
What's up, buddy? I mean, are they Australian? Because
is anyone Australian in the show?
This is my primary. That was my primary note. Is I understand that the Jaeger program was international, yeah. But I was deeply irritated by the lack of Australian voices until like three episodes in.
Yeah, it's international, but like for the most part, you know, obviously all the everything is built around the Pacific because that's where the rift. Was in the series, but in the second movie they talk about how there's, you know, programs in Europe and things to like train pilots, and
well, a huge chunk of Uprising does take place in Australia.
Does it?
Isn't that where the sister dies and the big conferences is in Sydney?
Oh yeah, right, because
a huge chunk of it's on Australia. So I guess the thing is, like, the Jaeger program, you know, like army brats, they got shipped around. So I would assume that birthwise, Tyler and
what's their names, Miles?
The blonde one. That's so funny. I really like this show, and I'm blanking on her name.
Haley.
I knew it was an H one. Tyler and Haley come off very American. They were at least raised by American parents. That's how I've rationalized them not having any sort of Aussie accent.
Right. Yeah, Pacific Rim, The Black is what we're talking about this week. It came out in March of 2021. Is that right?
Believe so.
Am I saying that right? So this is the first 2021 project that we're looking at, because I think the last episode, Nazira 1964, came out originally in 2020, although it had a wider release later. So the first project of 2021, and that puts it, Miles, oh my goodness, only 3 years after Uprising, because Uprising, Pacific Rim Uprising, came out March 15th of 2018. So, right, 3 years.
Yeah, we get like what seems to be, you know, one of the Kaiju Jaeger combos in the series.
Yeah. Is it Apex?
Sure.
What's the name of that monster? It's not really in season one, right?
He appears in season one. I actually haven't seen season two, but I did watch season one in its entirety when it came out. I rewatched a good chunk of it for this episode. And here's what I really like. Actually, before we get into that, Patrick, tell us, what's in a title?
Yeah, Pacific Rim, The Black. It was known in Japan as Rimu Anoko no Tariku, which stands for the Dark Continent, which maybe is a better title. What is the black referring to? Like the kind of like the blacked out zone?
It could be a specifically Australian reference. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But wasn't the second Monsters movie called Dark Continent as well?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
I don't want any relation to that piece of crap.
The continent of darkness. It was known because Pacific Rim itself had so many different titles across the world. For whatever reason, that like just didn't translate out entirely into other languages. You do have a lot of other titles where this is released internationally on Netflix. It got all over the world. Titanus del Pacifico, Tierra de Nadil. In Ecuador, translates to Titans of the Pacific, which was the name for the movie series, and the subtitle is No Man's Land, which is another one.
No Man's Land's pretty good.
Yeah, and in Italy, the subtitle was La Zona Oscura, the Dark Zone. In Estonia, translated out to Battle of the Pacific, and similarly in the Ukraine, the Pacific Rim was translated to Ring of Fire, and there's a few places across the world where the series is known as Ring of Fire as opposed to Pacific Rim, which I like it. I like Ring of Fire. I think we've talked about it before. Ring of Fire, No Man's Land has a great ring to it. Pacific Rim, The Black is a pretty cool name, I guess, all things considered.
I like
considered.
The title. I think you're right. I think The Black kind of is like a reference to just kind of the wasteland. And that's one thing I really like about this particular show is it does go for the post-apocalyptic angle in a very unique way that we hadn't really gotten to see in this franchise. Like, we see in the second one a little bit of that where, you know, at the beginning that they've kind of taken over some bits that have been decimated by the kaiju. But I like that this one presents a completely different scenario and really does feel very post-apocalyptic, very disconnected from what the movies were doing. And I think gives a very unique perspective for this world that Del Toro and company built.
Yeah, I mean, I will say it's probably my main problem with the series is it does feel like it's a little disconnected. Like, how, where in the timeline does this exist? You know, it doesn't really matter because it's, you know, Mad Max style.
Yeah.
Australia is kind of a wasteland.
That's part of the fun of it. Like, I don't know, because I also don't really care, to be perfectly honest, mm-hmm. because you do have this Jaeger kaiju combo kind of lurking around that you get bits and pieces of. It's more of an ominous, it's out there situation, and that there are still kaiju roaming around.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely after the first movie, but maybe...
It's definitely after the first one. It should be after the second one, too, but...
Oh, okay.
Because they didn't have the kaiju combos until Charlie Day did his whole thing.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's also, I think the introduction has some Jaegers that are shown to have been destroyed in both movies, so...
Yeah, I don't know if they specifically, like, give a pinpoint, but I really do like a lot of what this show does. So we are kind of introduced at the very beginning to our main characters, who are both children of Jaeger pilots, mm-hmm. Who, you know, they kind of live through the kind of final attack on their town. This takes place 5 years prior, so I would guess this would be during the original Pacific Rim.
Yeah, so the title comes from the evacuation of Australia, basically all the interior and major cities of Australia in Operation Blackout. So it's them basically giving it up to the Jaegers, which, you know, stinks, but it seems like it has turned into kind of a post-apocalyptic continent.
Which is typically your bread and butter.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, oh, that's so refreshing, such a cool idea, but it is kind of the same feel that we got in the Godzilla animated series, which
spoiler warning, I don't know.
This is the same production company.
It's the same production company
that made it, the same studio.
But the narrative is way better.
Oh, yes, I will. Yes, I'll give him the points there. One of the main writers, I guess, slash showrunners. The developers for the show were Greg Johnson and Craig Kyle. Craig Kyle is a comic book author who's maybe most recently done some of the X-23 and...
I think he's the co-creator of X-23, isn't he?
Oh, the character?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. And he has worked in films before. He was a producer on the first two Thor movies and co-writer, I should say, for Thor Ragnarok. So, like, the really good one that everyone likes.
Right. Has done a lot of animated comic book work, a lot of the direct-to-video Marvel movies, but...
Which no one remembers because they just kind of stopped doing them.
I own the next Avengers movie. I really liked it. But, I mean... Had a huge part of X-Men Evolution, Wolverine and the X-Men, both series I really, really liked. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, to me, this is in good hands. I really like, so you have, this takes place 5 years after the parents have gone to mm-hmm. kind of secure the border or whatever. And the kids and whoever was left behind have been left their own devices in this kind of oasis in the midst of all the terror that is going on in Australia for 5 years. And events get kicked off when Haley discovers they have been above a Jaeger training station this entire time. and the klaxons go off after she is like tried to like activate. What's the Jaeger's name?
Atlas Destroyer.
Atlas Destroyer.
Destroyer. Yes.
Yeah, Atlas Destroyer, which can't really destroy much because it has been stripped of weapons because it was a purely training Jaeger at this point. But it brings up a Category 4 Kaiju Copperhead and results in the death of virtually everyone they know and love.
Yeah, sorry, the last 5 years, everyone you know
like,
is dead.
They set up all this stuff of like, oh, the girl that Tyler's kind of into and like the best friend. Nope, crushed immediately. All dead.
Yeah, the first episode is pretty brutal in that respect. These are two seasons of the show that Netflix produced in what is known as a ONA, which I had not heard before.
Yeah, and I hate it.
OVAs are pretty standard, like either movies or usually contained series put out by anime companies, I guess sometimes direct to video, but oftentimes kind of re-shown on TV. But they're usually contracted for not a ongoing series, if that makes sense. OVA, original video.
Yeah.
Animation.
It depends on whatever it is, because some kind of ran for a little bit and you're like, what's going on here?
Yeah. I think maybe it's partially
like Lotus War, I think, ran longer than most OVAs, but typically, yeah, they're anywhere from 4 to 8 episodes or a little bit longer than your standard anime. It's about 40, 45 minutes, sometimes an hour.
And of course, this is in conjunction with Legendary Television, the company that owns both Pacific Rim and Godzilla. And it was around this time when this show was kind of announced prior to its release there in 2021, maybe right after the second Pacific Rim movie. There was at the time a lot of rumblings of a Godzilla and Pacific Rim crossover. And I think probably maybe there's some cross contamination because what we eventually ended up getting was Godzilla versus Kong, of course, but just because Legendary owned both, you know, those properties going on at the same time, I guess people thought it was a possibility. It doesn't make a lot of sense, you know, like they're very different universes. So I'm glad that that didn't happen. But Legendary Television, of course, would go on to make the Monarch TV show, which we will talk about when it comes up here. But I can't really. What else has Legendary Television done? They had a couple of deals with Warner Brothers, but
yeah, and I think they did. Let's see. I think they were involved with The Expanse, weren't they?
Oh, did they? That's interesting.
It's certainly on their list.
Oh, probably. Because I mean, a bunch of other.
Yeah, because you have these large like co-productions. They're also on the Netflix Lost in Space series.
That makes sense.
The Skull Island one that we're going to be doing in not too long. There's, I guess they're involved in the Dune Prophecy series.
Oh, okay.
Dune's,
yeah, they're, you know, legendary, the Dune movies. Yeah. Makes sense. So, I mean, all the movies
that was that Carnival Row series for Amazon Prime.
Right. Which I've still never seen the second season of because it came out like 5 years later.
I know it's a problem that Netflix, they always wait and see if the audience is going to respond, and then they late renew a show, so it takes 2 or 3 years, and we'll usually do 2 seasons at once, which they're currently doing with Wednesday, where it took like 2 or 3 years to get Wednesday season 2, and which is, you know, not being received as quite as warmly as the first.
I've heard she kind of gets lost in the shuffle in the show.
I've only watched the first couple episodes. I'm enjoying it, but it does seem not to be at quite as strong. And there could be several reasons for that. But yeah, I don't love that model all the time because, I mean, of course you need to wait and see how the show is doing before you renew it. But again, coming out of the pandemic, it was kind of, and several strikes, you know, a lot of things got delayed very severely. So that does need to be said. But it is unfortunate because sometimes these shows can really lose their momentum. And, you know, this didn't really happen with this show because the second season came out not too far afterwards.
Well, yeah, the first season ends pretty abruptly. And it does feel like a part one because it's only 7 episodes and they're short. Yeah. They're
Netflix 100% made 14 and just made you wait for it. This is what they do. I mean, they did this with Voltron.
Castlevania. Well, with Voltron, they like very much said like, oh, this is season one, part one, and season two, part two.
They just said part one because like by the time you get to season seven and eight, and like it's season seven's like six episodes and eight is like seven episodes. You're like, okay, cut it out. We know what you did.
Yeah. But yeah, as far as a project, like a legacy project in Pacific Rim universe, like I said, I was a little disappointed because I wanted part of the fun, I think, of the series is how international it is and how, you know, they're
people
from all over and there's design, big monster and robot designs from all over. The monster designs in this show. Can we talk a little bit about the technical designs here? I'm not a huge fan of the kaiju that we get to see here.
I mean, this goes back to my criticism of Pacific Rim in general. I think the kaiju designs are just not that interesting.
Well, yes. You know, our main one for the majority of the show is Copperhead, which is a category four. And I think towards
extremely well animated, looks good. I mean, while I don't love the design, like they do a great job with that kaiju.
Yeah, I'm just not convinced by the design. I think it's animated well enough, but and then you get to, you know, spoiler warnings for the show, but Kaiju Boy in kaiju form, and it's better, but it's still, I don't know, it does feel like it's a part of the universe. I just kind of wish we had more interesting, characterful monsters. I do very much like Atlas Destroyer. I think the color schemes especially really help land it, and it gets a lot of character when the arm is ripped off and has to get replaced, and that just feels like great giant robo stuff. I commissioned a piece of art of Atlas Destroyer for the title card, and I probably should have done with the destroyed arm and without both, but the destroyed arm, the giant red destroyed arm is great.
I think for some folks, this show might suffer just because it's the only other real piece of Pacific Rim that you have outside the movies. Like it does feel like there should be like at least four other shows that take place in different times and spots across the world. And I think maybe that might resolve some of the show's issues. But in terms of like a, like, let's take a slice of this universe and just focus on this story. Like, I really like this. I really love this post-apocalyptic story of these two young kids trying to, you know, basically get out of where they were and possibly find their parents and come across, you know, a crazy adventure on the way. It's, I mean, I love stories like this, and I think they do a pretty good job. Every now and then it does fall into some of the YA tropes with some of the, you know, hey, maybe we shouldn't focus on this fight when we're in the situation that we're in, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there is a little bit of that, but I like Tyler and Haley a lot. Mm-hmm. I like the cast that you get, and when you deepen the world of, like, oh, you've got these marauders and mercenaries banding about this. I mean, it does feel very, like you said, Mad Max-y in that, in that respect. And I love the bits when they're in the city, and they're kind of... You see Tyler actually trying to like remember what life was like pre, you know, kaiju invasion. And that was really cool. There's a lot of good character stuff here. And I think that's what's important to me. Unlike the Godzilla trilogy that we watched, I think there's a much bigger focus on making characters that you at least care about and a story that makes sense within the franchise that it's telling.
Yeah. Yeah, I will agree. I think it does some things very well. The thing is, like, if you're making the shift from live action to animated, you want to make use of the animation. And they do in a few ways. I think their interpretation of the drift is really good.
Yes.
As well as the cockpit in general of Atlas Destroyer and like how that technology works. I think that looks very good. And honestly, I'm a little impressed just because I was so down on parts of the visual style of the Godzilla animated trilogy, and this fixes a lot of those problems. You have much more expressive, emotive human characters, and I don't know. I would say the kaiju action is better, obviously, just because there is some in the series.
Right.
But it is still, you know, it's very limited in the episodes, because the episodes are so short. I wish it built up to a larger fight and had that to be the kind of focus.
I think it would have been better off being a trilogy of films. Weirdly enough, because the complaint I had about Godzilla is these films clearly weren't thought out enough. And that could have been two seasons of television that could have worked. I think this could have been a trilogy of films and give us like three cohesive story chunks. And I think that would have been fine.
Well, I was about to say, if you take those 14 episodes and divide them up into three movies, it's like 3 hour and a half long movies. And it's so funny that that is almost exactly what we got with the Godzilla MA trilogy lengthwise.
But this actually, I think, would have worked better not being segmented by the episodic. It's so funny because it's the exact opposite problem as the Godzilla trilogy.
Yeah. I will say it does have a very binge worthy quality to the episodes, which I think obviously is the point for Netflix. They're looking for you to, you know, stay hooked into the story. And they don't do the thing which the animated movies, the Godzilla anime movies, did, which was make you wait forever to really get to that action. You know, we have a kaiju attack and fight with a Jaeger in episode one.
Yeah.
You know, it's not long, but it is in there.
It happens.
It happens. So we get to see kind of the universe and the main plot gets started very early, where, you know, I think at that point in the first movie, what was the first movie called? Godzilla Earth? No.
Planet of the Monsters.
But Planet of the Monsters, yes. That one, I think we're still on the spaceship by the end of the first episode.
There's not a monster fight properly until the last 15 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, so definitely solves that problem. Yeah, but like I said, we talked about Polygon Pictures, the animation studio. And I think the animation here, it has more of a 2D layered on 3D quality, which I think is really good. I don't know. Every time I think about the Godzilla animated films, the animation gets worse in my head. I don't think it was that bad, but this definitely feels like a marked improvement.
It is. I mean, and they had learned a lot from that period. I mean, they had also done like that Transformers War for Cybertron trilogy, which that's really, really good. So they do have more experience as we roll forward. And like I said, I really, really enjoy this one. I think it both is a great boon and kind of a great problem that is not just a Monster of the Week style show. It's not, I mean, it is a serialized story. And really, it's a 14 episode serialized story. It is not two seasons of television. It is a single 14 episode story. And I think it really succeeds in a lot of ways that does something interesting and doesn't try to retread the films. I think that's what kind of struck me the most is like, you know, you do have drifting and you do have kaiju battles with Jaegers, but what it's doing is so wholly different than either of the movies. And I like that. And it's why I think maybe the reason it doesn't get as many flowers as it deserves is that it probably should have been one of several, like an anthology style series of animated stories set in the Pacific Rim universe.
Yeah, that's the thing. I would have loved to have like wrapped up their story a little earlier and then maybe gone somewhere else for season two.
I'm guessing the viewership wasn't there because it seems like if this had been a Firecracker thing, they would have done something else. I know there is tentatively plans for some sort of Pacific Rim prequel show, which I'm frankly less interested in.
Yeah. The early days, maybe.
I don't really need that.
Yeah. Who knows? It seems like it is a property that they would want to go back to because while it wasn't, you know, over the moon numbers wise or box office wise, I feel like it is a big splashy film that you can, you know, do a $150 million budget and potentially make a good amount of that back.
Right.
It's so funny. We're dialing back expectations for these summer blockbusters. I think rightfully so, because this year we've had both Superman and Fantastic Four first steps not make $1 billion, and people are like, it's okay. It's fine. Like, they expected them to do like crazy numbers, and they've done very good, but not.
But yeah, but crazy. Both have done very, very well. Superman, I think, a little bit more than Fantastic Four. But yeah, I think the age of like expecting $1 billion post COVID is certainly over. I mean, it will happen from time to time, but it's not going to be the regular thing that it was for a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, right. So, I mean, this show has gotten pretty good reviews. I am surprised that it didn't continue on, but I think maybe it was just one of those things, like you said, unless it did complete gangbusters, it wasn't going to get a third season or kind of like a renewal.
Netflix makes weird decisions.
Yeah.
Like, I will never not be pissed at them that I don't have like five seasons of Everything Sucks.
Yeah, very good show. It has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 71% and a very similar audience average rating of 7, like out of 10. I think I'm right there with that kind of score, somewhere in between 6 and 8. It's not as good as the movies, but I think if you're looking for more of the universe, is definitely worth checking out, much more so than Godzilla Earth, which I can't recommend to people. I forget who I was talking to about those movies recently, the Godzilla animated trilogies, but yeah, it's like, yeah, those were not not for me.
I think they are the worst piece of Godzilla media that we've consumed.
can you choke up on your mic a little bit there?
Oh, yeah. I think they are the worst pieces of Godzilla media that we have consumed thus far.
Right. So what if you had to give this a rating? You know, we're not really
I think personal enjoyment, I'll probably skew 8, but overall, yeah, I mean, 7.5, 8 is a decent score for me. I like this better than the second movie. I like the shift in perspective. I like that it does something a little bit different with the universe. I like the characters a lot. I think the animation is very solid. And I would like more stories kind of like this. I mean, we did kind of tread on this a little bit with kind of a Love and Monsters type of deal, where you are in the post-apocalypse. You have characters who have lived through an era overrun with monsters and are trying to deal with what is left, as far as they know, because these kids have been disconnected from the world for 5 years. They have no idea what's going on. And I really do enjoy the story quite a bit. I think it was a very, very strong show for me, at least.
Oh, right. So that is going to do it. A short episode getting into Pacific Rim, The Black. Maybe it will not be the final piece of Pacific Rim media. Legendary definitely has some things in the fire. But I will say, like I said, just a hearty endorsement of this over the Godzilla animated trilogy for sure. By comparison, I was expecting,
even as a defender of Uprising, this is still this is the best thing since the first movie.
Right. So where can folks find us if they want to chat with us about kaiju stuff or send us things online, Miles?
Well, you can email us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. You can message us on Blue Sky at Kaiju versus History. You can visit our website, kaijuversushistory.com. Please rate and review our show, comment, share with your friends. Let us know what you think. Check out our Letterboxd account, Kaiju versus History, to see our reviews and watch our list of films. But if you actually want to talk to Patrick and I about kaiju stuff, which several more people are doing, go to our sister show, CosmicCrit.com. Click on that Discord link. We have a Kaiju versus History channel where you can talk to Patrick and I in real time about pretty much anything kaiju related or not related. These days is often, you know, what fun toys and teasers that we're getting in real time. It's good. It's always fun. We've had a bunch more people join recently and had some fun chats. But until then, Patrick, what are we doing next week?
Well, I just want to mention that one of our Blue Sky followers, Jared, wanted to remind us of the kaiju film Ninja Monsters, Jaron versus Jaura or Gaura, which, yes, this is already on our list. This came out last year, I think, 2024, and is the latest by Shinpei Hayashiya. So basically, if he does a kaiju movie, you don't need to worry. We're putting it on our we're putting it on our list. The director, of course, of the Rega movies. So very excited about that. Thank you for bringing it to our attention, though. We are expanding our kaiju list. Whenever a movie is released, obviously it's going on there, but that has been on there for well over a year. So yeah, so that is going to do it. And we're going to catch you next time when, believe it or not, we are staying in a Netflix frame of mind, Miles. And we're going to chill out on the couch because after an impossibly long hiatus that felt like it might never end, director Hideaki Anno is going to finish off his amazing rebuild series of Evangelion. Oh, hold on, Miles. Is this Amazon and not Netflix?
Yes, it is.
Oh,
it
no.
Is.
Well, I watched it on Netflix. I thought
the series
I did.
Is on Netflix, and I think they put the other stuff, but when it initially came out, I believe it was in Amazon.
Well, I'm staying in a streaming service frame of mind. Hideaki Anno is going to finish off his amazing rebuild series of Evangelion. He started 14 years prior. And yeah, we have to answer the question, is this fourth part of his series going to finish strong after a few films that remain contentious with fans of the original series? So yeah, come along with us and find out as we finally finish off the quadrilogy, the rebuild quadrilogy. That is right. Tune in next time for History versus Evangelion 3.0 plus 1.0 Thrice Upon a Time. I still can't believe that's the title.